Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Reason is our weapon of choice. Skeptics know that you do have a voice. Science, not so we'll be defying it. What we know, so it's best to apply it. Feed you information, deposit the knowledge, so you know ignorance is not an option. Welcome to the RSS feed with your host, Raina Rose. Skeptical superwoman, but in plain clothes. She ain't no Jane Doe, nor is she a day old. So don't go with arguments, weakly molded like Plato. Kicking false info like Kato, but it should be a J-O. To expand your mind like a transit line. Nothing is there for true, cause you think so. It's evident that you never win, cause the evidence you present is irrelevant in the present tense. It's reckless and negligent. Never ask questions or to think ignorance is good and relative. So we spark the faith, cause you know the truth is hard to take, especially with so many false words. And we start the day, when we serve reality, we start to face. Shout out to the skeptics, my freak thinking is a lyrical massage. I fire and heat seeking and aim that you shoot to win the leg. You weak creatures, Christian scientists, truth debate, evolution. Elitists of the government that hate the revolution. Armchair activists who overstate their contribution to the movement, cause they say they have solutions. So it's best to listen and understand skepticism is the religion. And so we get a better vision of how the world works in what we call marvelous to make a better future. You know that it starts with us. Progressive thoughts, progressive talks, the sharing of ideas, the medicine we need. Under the suits of the RSSD. Say what? Under the suits of the RSSD.
Hey everybody, this is Raina, and this is another installment of the RSS feed. Today is kind of going to be a short show. It's pre-recorded, so sorry guys if you wanted to call in. Unfortunately, you're not going to be able to do so. This weekend is actually my birthday weekend, so not really keen on spending my whole Saturday on Blog Talk Radio. So, you know, as much as I love you guys, I need to take a little break and enjoy myself, you know, do things that I like to do. But in any case, today we're just going to kind of, you know, talk about a whole bunch of things. Nothing really, no set theme today. But on my next show, I'm going to be talking with a friend of mine that I've actually met from when I was doing Quiz Bowl, or the Black Nerd Bowl, that is what we used to call it. But it's the Honda Campus All Star Challenge. I met him during that, and we've maintained some contact over the years. And we're going to be talking about women that he admires, since it is Women's History Month. And we might get into some other topics, might get into a little bit of the gun debate and some other things, but we'll see where the conversation goes. So hopefully that you guys will tune in for that. It should be a lot of fun. He's a pretty intelligent guy, so it should be a good conversation. So with that, last Sunday, if you guys haven't listened to it, last Sunday's show, we were talking about sexism and racism in the atheist community. Really good conversation. It was Kim, of course, you know, the host of Black Freethinkers show, myself and Dr. Annalise Fonza, and we had a really decent discussion. I think you guys will enjoy it if you get a chance. You know, go over and listen to that. Lots of good articles were written about, National Day of Solidarity for Black Atheists and Nonbelievers. So you should check out some of those. And if you haven't already, check out Bridget Gaudette's articles on Shades of Black Atheism. The latest one is on Heather Henderson. So check that one out. What else? What else is going on, Kim? Pi Day is coming up. For those of you who don't know what Pi Day is, Pi Day is 314. That is, of course, the numerical representation of pi. So if you're a nerd, if you're a math nerd, if you've ever had a math, any type of math course, not any type of math course, but if you've had courses through high school, you should know what pi is. And so you should look up any and all activities related to Pi Day. Some good events going on this month for Women's History Month. I think there's a documentary that I'm going to go see this weekend.
The
Black Girl Project.
Not PIE.
although one of the traditional events of Pi Day is to bake pie.
Exactly.
And sometimes people bake other things that are shaped in the symbol for pie. Some people just, bake a pie with the symbol of pie cut out of the crust. So, other things. There's all sorts of things. People try to, as best they can to memorize all the numerical digits in pie up to a certain amount, see how many they can go out to. I can't really go out very far. I can't remember all the digits. I can't, there's too many digits in pi for me, and I'm not really interested in, competing in that way. But, you guys are free to, maybe you guys can call in the show next, in 2 weeks and impress me with how many digits you can remember. I won't be able to give you anything because we don't have any merchandise or anything to give out right now. But I'll give you my you'll have my respect and my awe. So we're just gonna kind of shoot the shit today.
Lack
of a better word. So, I don't know if you guys have heard about this, but there's an article out right now about a trans woman fighter by the name of Fallon Fox. Fallon Fox is a transgendered woman, which means that she was born biologically male, but she has had the surgery, the sex change operation, shall I say, and she is now having her license under review because she did not state at the beginning that she was a transgendered woman. I don't have a problem with the fact that they're reviewing her license, because I do think that when you are in certain positions, you somewhat have an obligation to at least state up front, at least for transparency purposes. But I don't see any problem with her being a fighter in the MMA. What about you, Kim?
No. The way that I see it is, I don't watch MMA or anything of that nature, and I'm sure they have policies, and she's come out, and the information, is being put out there, so I'm sure they're making some type of provisions. However, there are biological changes that have taken place, so, she has gone through the entire process.
Right.
The psychological evaluation, the medical evaluation, and the medical changes.
She's on hormone therapy, all of that type of stuff. So she is different biologically than a man. She is not a man with breasts. She is no longer a male in her body at
all.
So she's something. She's not quite female biologically, but the fact is that she's much more female biologically now than what she was born.
Exactly.
So, and I think that in terms of her size and her physique, looking at her, she doesn't look any different than any woman of her size and stature who would be an athlete in that kind of a sport.
Exactly.
And some people have made a big deal about the fact that she has an undefeated record, but what's an like undefeated. When I hear people say undefeated record, I'm thinking they're talking about like, you know, upwards of like five, you know, or upwards of like three. You know what I mean? To me, it's undefeated. But like, if you actually look at her record, from what I understand, it only looks like she's beaten two women, and while she did beat them by knockout, which is very rare in MMA, from what I understand, you know, that's only two fighters. You know what I mean? And,
right.
You know, I'm not sure that she has the physical advantage over her, you know, her opponents that everyone imagines her to have, because she was born a man. At this point, she has undergone the change, and she is different. She is much more like a woman now than what she started out as. So, and in fact, should be treated like a woman in my opinion, or viewed as a woman. And she identifies herself as someone who is feminine, so she should be treated as such.
Yeah, that's respect. So,
and then the other thing about it that I don't understand, like, someone else brought this up, like, when you're talking about sports anyway, like, there's always someone who's going to be bigger and badder than you. You know what I mean? There's always going to be someone who's bigger and badder than you. And, you know, I mean, it brings up the idea, you know, the fight that Ali and George Foreman had, which, you know, if you look just by size and strength, George Foreman should have won that fight. And I'm sure a lot of people lost money on that fight. You know what I mean? Thinking that the older, you know, weaker Ali would be beaten by the younger, stronger George Foreman. But as we all know, the outcome of the Rumble in the Jungle, you know.
Exactly.
Ali murdered him in the end. And he did it because he was smart. And if you've ever seen the fight, which I recommend anybody sees, because it's very interesting, you know, even just, you know, the cultural things that you can kind of pick up on, you know, when you watch the documentary about it. But and also just learning about history and in the past. But, you know, he whooped George because he was smarter than George. It's the same reason that Bobby Riggs lost against, what was it, her name, Margaret Court? Was that her name? In the Battle of the Sexes?
Yeah, I believe that's her.
Bobby Riggs had a much harder swing. Much harder swing than she had. But she was smart, and she made him, she wore him out. She wore him down. To the point, you know, that she made him make stupid mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
So she was a lot smarter in playing her game, and that is why she won the set of three games that they had to play. So, you know, it just, you know, while it is true in general that men are physically stronger than women, that does not mean that women are weak.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
This is that does not mean that we're weak, that we are incapable of doing some things. It just means that there are things that we sometimes have to work at harder in order to be as physically strong or stronger than a man. But there are lots of men who are very weak. Okay? And I would say that the general population of men is not as strong as they would believe themselves to be. But I think we're conditioned in our society to think of women as being weak, not just physically weaker, but just weak. And this is something that I think it plays out in a lot of different ways. I mean, in the documentary Makers, for example, a woman was denied a job that she should have been up for because of the company's policy regarding seniority, but the company came up with a lie, basically, that said that she could not be promoted to this other position because well, she was initially told by somebody that she couldn't do it because she was a woman. And if they did that, then they'd have to promote other women. But when they went into court, the reason that was given is that she would have to carry up to 30 pounds. And as and her lawyer, who was much smaller than she was, very tiny, petite woman, picked up, you know, I think even over 30 pounds. I think she picked up even 50 pounds and was able to move it easily and showed that, you know, it wasn't, it had nothing to do with this woman being weak and being unable to carry the weight that she needed to carry to get that position, and had everything to do with the fact that she was a woman, and they did, this company did not want to promote women.
Right.
So, you know, this is not to say that women, that your average woman is going to be strong as your average man. It is to say that we need to get out of our minds this binary that says that women are weak and are and therefore incapable of doing certain things. We can do a lot of the things that men can do. We may not be able to get there as quickly because we don't put on as much lean muscle mass, because we don't have as much, we don't have as much testosterone as they do. But
right.
We are still capable of lifting weights and building muscle mass. And actually, there are some studies that suggest that we have advantages over men in certain respects with, you know, with regard to exercise and what have you. We can, you know, sometimes endure exercise for longer periods, and it seems as though we may recover faster from strenuous exercise than men do. So, you know, there's different ways to think about this, and so we have to get over this idea that being a woman means that you are weak, and that therefore we must save you. And I don't know about you, but it kind of also kind of reads to me a little bit as sort of trans panic. You know what I mean? That this trans woman is going to somehow, you know, steal the sport. You know what I mean?
Right.
From these women, you know, and, you know, like there's nothing that they can do. Well, no, there is something you can do. You can beat her.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like you would beat any other opponent. You have to think about it. And every opponent is going to be different, you know?
Exactly.
And she has a weakness. She has a weak point. She has a point in her strategy that's wide open somewhere, and somebody is going to exploit that. And when they do, I'm just going to wait and see what people have to say, because I just can't get over this idea that we have to somehow protect these women, you know, from this trans woman, this invader, this, you know, interloper. You know what I mean? This is the game. This is the sport. I mean, there are some women who are actually trying to transition themselves into a place where they can fight against male opponents because of the lack of female opponents. So why would you then deny this woman, you know, her opportunity because she wasn't born a woman?
Wow.
I think that's
right.
I think that's just ridiculous.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. And the thing is that people need to take into consideration that, you know, again, her makeup has changed. You know, her chemical and biological makeup has changed. You know, because she's taken hormone therapy, you know, it's more estrogen being introduced into her body. You know, things have changed.
Right. And like I said, it goes to the trans panic thing. Like people, for most people, we're a very heterosexual culture, you know, so we don't know what to do when we encounter people who are transgender, and we have this automatic reaction that says, you know, and I've seen this, like I had a conversation on Facebook like earlier today with someone who insisted on referring to, you know, Miss Fallon by the male pronoun, which is extremely disrespectful.
Yes.
You know, to someone who was born feeling as though they were in the wrong body.
Exactly.
And there's science to back up, you know, their feelings, their subjective feelings. There's science to back it up. So this is not something they're just making up, and they're not undergoing all of this physical and emotional stress, you know, undergoing operations, being evaluated by psychologists for years, being on hormone therapy, you know, just to displace women. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Just to diminish what we are as women. That has nothing to do with it. And you shouldn't, as a woman, feel threatened just by
right.
the mere presence of a woman who was not born physically a woman. Just like as a man, it should not threaten your manhood to encounter someone who was born a woman who's now a man. You know,
exactly.
It just makes no sense to me, you know?
Right. You know, your masculinity should not be threatened in any way whatsoever. I mean,
yeah.
Their transitioning has absolutely nothing to do with you. I mean, it's just like meeting anybody, you know, anywhere. There's people that you want to associate with and others, not so much.
Right.
But it should
right.
not be on something such as that unless you're
right.
just, you know, unless you just really have some issues there. And, I mean, if that's the problem, then that's okay, too. But at least be honest enough with yourself to be able to say, well, this person may have a lovely personality, and under other circumstances, you know, we probably will be able to be friends, but right now I have some biases, period.
Right.
People will respect that.
Right, and there's already so much sexism in sports anyway. You know what I mean? It just makes you, it really kind of irritates me to hear people speaking about Miss Fallon in this way when you consider how much sexism is already in sports and how the sex segregation that goes on in our sports. While there are some good reasons in terms of, like, you know, I wouldn't want to see women, you know, who are much smaller than your average 300-pound linebacker, you know, on the same football field. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't necessarily want to see that, not because they're women, not because I think they need to be protected, but because I wouldn't want to see a 100-pound man.
right.
a 300-pound linebacker either. You know what I mean? So while I do in some essence understand the you know why there is some sex segregation, there's sex segregation in a lot of other sports where it's not necessarily needed. Like there's really no reason why there needs to be sex segregation in something like ski jumping, where you have quite a few women who've broken ski jumping records that men previously held. You know, there are a number of sports that are not really needing to be sex segregated. And then on top of the sex segregation, you also have preferential treatment given to men's sports. You know, for the Olympics. For funding, for advertising, for everything, and so you could just say, oh well, that's just because you know people prefer to watch that or whatever. But I think we've also seen in our culture where the reverse has been true, where if you put it on TV and you advertise it properly and you create a space for it, people will watch.
Right.
You know what I mean? So
exactly.
it really can go both ways. You know, there's lots of things that have been on TV that have been successful that no one thought could be on TV. You know, shows that are now iconic, you know, like Mary
All
Tyler Moore and Rhoda and All in the Family and all of these other shows, even
The Cosby Show.
Good Times and The Cosby Show. You know, A Different World. Like, there have been so many, you know, shows that and things that have been put on TV that people previously thought, like, oh, there's no way. You know what I mean? But if you put it on TV, I mean, I'm pretty sure there were people who didn't think The Scandal would be the success that it was, that it is now, with a black leading lady, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There are people there, I'm sure there were people that were skeptical of that, but it does very well in ratings. You know, Twitter lights up every Thursday night.
There you go.
So something's happening. So, I mean, I just think that sometimes we have to be more open-minded about, you know, things. And, you know, if I'm wrong and there is a tangible reason why, you know, Miss Fallon should not be allowed to fight in the MMA with women, then, you know, I'm willing to accept that. But right now, I'm not convinced with only two victories, you know? I'm not convinced. Now show me where she's undefeated for years, and no one can get a punch in, or no one can really, you know, even come close. You know what I mean?
Right, exactly.
Show me that maybe they're more testosterone than we thought. You know what I mean? Show me that there is a clear disadvantage to any woman. And I don't mean all women. I just mean any, like to all women. Well, I do mean all women. You know, to all women, you know?
Right.
And, you know, and maybe I'll agree with you. But, I mean, I'm sure there's some pretty badass MMA fighters that can go up against this woman. I mean, most of these women are probably training against men in the first place. You know? So I'm pretty sure if they're training against those men that they're pretty tough, you know? So they don't need our protection, you know?
Exactly.
So.
Exactly. You know.
Yeah. So, yeah. So I just thought I would, you know, mention that. Sorry if that took up too much time, but I was really sort of bothered, and I couldn't really say completely what all my problems were with, you know, the way that people were reacting to this were, but I'm glad I got some of that off my chest. If you guys haven't seen, there's actually a really good video that came out recently from Feminist Frequency. She's begun to put out some of the videos in her series on video games and on tropes in video games, you know, regarding, you know, gender stereotypes in various gaming platforms, on various gaming platforms. And so she does a very good job going through all the different video games. I can't imagine how many hours of video games she must have played or watched or
okay.
do all of that. And I used to game a lot more when I was younger, but I can't really keep up with it so much now. But a lot of these things you noticed when, like, you noticed, but you couldn't always put them in the words. You know what I mean? Like, you know, why do I have to play this? You know, this male character who's always rescuing this dumb princess. You know what I mean?
Right.
I'm a woman. I'm not dumb. You know what I mean?
Right.
Why do I have to play this game? You know? Why can't we just be saving the kingdom? Why do we always have to save the girl? You know? So, this is pretty good. It's pretty good series. So.
Yeah, I mean, that's how it's been for a while. Not that that makes it right, but...
No. No, but I'm glad that she's out there and naming the problem and stuff. But she also talks about, like, you know, tropes and other forms of media. And, you know, she's talked about, like, how television shows, for example, you know, where women are concerned, like, where men are concerned is totally different. Like, you can have a show like, you know, 24, you know what I mean, with a male protagonist who is interested in nothing more than keeping people safe. You know what I mean?
Right.
Not getting the girl, you know what I mean? I'm pretty sure he probably does get the girl at some point, but that's not the point. Like, usually the overarching goal is not the woman, you know, in a lot of your, like, big budget, like, action movies, you know, the male protagonist usually has a goal in mind, you know, save the world, you know, get the bad guy or whatever. Whereas with women in movies, you know, regardless of what it is, like, there's usually never a situation where a woman is not diverted romantically. You know what I mean? Or
mm-hmm.
or interested in a man, or has you know, or even has to report to a man. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Whereas, like, very very often in the male action things, like, the men, like, they completely bunk the system. They don't care. They don't care who their boss is. They don't care about anything. You know?
Right. Exactly.
So.
Exactly.
Yeah. So. So yeah, so they talk about that, and then, you know, there's the Smurfette principle, like, you know, a lot of times, like, on, you know, television shows, like, it seems like they never can really deal with diversity unless with, like, more than one, you know what I mean, person
right.
that represents diversity. Like, if it's a show like your show, Kim,
mm-hmm.
you know, Big Bang Theory, right?
Yes.
They've got one female on that show.
Yes.
They've got one main female on that show. They've got one minority character. Because they can't really deal with, you know what I mean, too many. They can't deal with too much diversity.
But they've mocked that before, and when they thought
yeah.
Rajesh, the Indian guy, when they thought he was going to go back to India.
Right.
Sheldon, he was saying, that he was voting for a nice Latino to keep the diversity in their group to replace Rajesh. It was just
exactly. Exactly. I mean, and I did hear about that episode. So it's good that they at least have brought it up. You know what I mean? Now, dealing
right.
with it, though, is more difficult. And I wish they would have just dealt with it, you know, because there's lots of female, you know, female nerds. There's lots of, you know, black nerds, Asian nerds, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
We're all out here, so.
Well, they brought in a couple. They brought in Bernadette for Howard.
Yeah.
And I mean, so, you know,
yeah.
I think they're slowly introducing people. But, yeah, no, I would like to see
yeah.
an Urkel on there myself.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, it's not something that gets brought up often, you know, but generally speaking, like, they usually, you know, if they're going to have a main female, you know, if they're going to have a bunch of characters and they have some main characters, if they're going to have a female, it's only going to be one female main character, generally speaking, you know what I mean?
Right.
Unless, of course, it's Three's Company.
Exactly.
So.
Right.
So.
But yeah. You know, that's why I say with the advent of the internet and just things that we can do, hopefully we'll be able to position ourselves in the future for, you know, to address things like that in a more proactive and innovative way. And I'm going to leave it at that.
Well, yeah, there's lots of, you know, good,
mm-hmm.
you know, shows that are being produced. And I've heard of one called Asian Avenue. And then there's a show that's produced regarding black lesbians in Atlanta called Between Women.
Mm-hmm.
Then, of course, there's one of my personal favorites, Awkward Black Girl, which
yes.
just ended, unfortunately. But as much as I enjoy that show, It still, to a certain degree, irks me that we can't get out of this model of, you know, I have to find love, you know what I mean?
Right.
And all this
right.
other thing, as though there's
see,
nothing.
Oh, yeah,
else
no, that
to
seems like to a possible question. Because, you know, you're talking about I have to find love. You know, for the people that have this question, maybe you could answer this for them, since this is the Ask a Scientist Skeptic, you know, Reason Day. Basically, what is love? Is it real, or is it just dopamine? What is love?
I mean, it is. I mean, it's as real as any other emotion that you feel. I mean, anger is real. You know, you feel the anger, like your body, you know, it tenses up, you know what I mean? You may, you know, your blood pressure might go up, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You may feel the urge to fight, you know, off the adrenaline, you know? But it's just like, but love, I mean, is real. It's just biochemical.
Right.
You know? It involves, you know, dopamine and the reward pathway and, you know, oxytocin, which, you know, makes sort of people feel close to one another.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oxytocin. And these things work on multiple levels. You know, like they, you know, it's the same sort of chemicals that are involved with, you know, maternal and child bond as, you know, romantic bonds. But, you know, in different amounts, obviously. And then, of course, what that person means to you is going to be represented differently in your brain, you know. But it basically involves the same set of chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, yeah, and we can see how much you love someone. We can kind of see how much you love someone. I mean, it's measurable by the amount of activity in your brain. So we can see, you know, if you really love somebody, we can measure it. So it is something that you can measure, as much as people say you can't measure it. Love is, you know, love is beyond science. No, it's not, actually. Now, does science, you know, describe love in like the same way like that a poem, you know what I mean, describes it? Does it make us feel the same things? Science is going to be all ooey-gooey about it, you know what I mean? But, and that's kind of where art and, you know, language has to take over. But the fact of the matter is that what makes you feel those things is all biochemical.
Exactly.
But you can be a scientist and appreciate good poetry and, you know, some
mm-hmm.
petty pentagraphs, you know what I mean?
Oh, you want to give you out your plea anyway. Oh, that's too funny. That's too funny. But I mean, that's what it's all about, you know, just showing people that these things are real. It can be measured. But let me give you another question that, you know, I know we get often. You know, what is morality? Can you have morality without having, you know, some type of holy book? And, you know, if you don't have a holy book or hold true to a religion, how can you possibly be a moral and ethical person?
Okay. That's a lot of questions, Kim. Let me go with the first. That's more than one question. You said we get this question a lot.
Yes,
a long question. No, morality is really just describing, you know, sort of, you know, proper behavior, you know, and it kind of deals with intention and, you know, what you do, basically. And, you know, I mean, there's a lot of different ways to kind of look at morality and how, you know, sort of the rubric, you know, that you use for deciding what's, you know, moral and what's immoral. But a lot of that comes out of your culture, you know, that you're raised in or nurtured in. But I mean, there are some things that are actually, you know, somewhat innate. I mean, we're social species, and I don't know if you've ever read The Selfish Gene, but, you know, some of the genes really only care about preserving themselves. You know what I mean? So the things that help you survive, help those genes survive, are the things that get conserved. So if you're a social animal, for example, you know, cooperating and you know, having certain roles within the group, you know, might help you, you know, find more sources of food, might help you protect your offspring, you know, might, you know, allow you to have more sexual access to, you know, potential partners, you know what I mean, and thus, you know, allows you to reproduce, you know, more. You know, there it protects you, it keeps you alive, it, you know, there's all sorts of things, you know, and then that, you know, that can come out of behaving morally, and we can see morals in you know, other species of animal. You know, there are animal species that will sometimes adopt members of other species. You know, there's actually a really, really cute little picture going around on the internet. It was a Bengal tiger, and he was playing with a pig. And the reason that he was playing with the pig is because he was reared by a pig early on. I guess his mother must have died or something, and so they had it suckled by a pig while it was still a cub. And so now as an adult, it recognizes the pig as kin, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, so you know, there's more to kin selection than you just look like me. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So, you know, and then, you know, there's, you know, there's other examples. Of course, there are examples that are, you know, horrifying, you know. And, of course, you know, human beings, you know, exhibit a lot of those characteristics, too. But really, morality is very relative. And when you think about it, in some ways, it needs to be. It's sort of beneficial in a way that it's relative, because it allows you to modify it as the situation requires. So when we were more isolated, you know, from one another, you know, or in tribes, you know, we don't necessarily have time, you know, to figure out whether or not one is friend or foe, you know. So fighting or defense may ensue. You know, but now that we're a larger tribe, you know, because of globalization and, you know, our ability to communicate with one another, the internet, you know, coming in contact with different cultures and all of that, and understanding, you know, that there are fewer differences than what we once believed there were, you know, we can now recognize each other as a part of one larger tribe, which we call the human race, you know. And so now we understand that certain things that we once believed were okay are wrong, like slavery, you know, like genocide, you know. In general, you know, as a group, we understand that these things are wrong. And the reason that we've come to understand that those things are wrong is because we have learned to see each other as being a part of the same group, you know. So I think that it's important to understand that morality evolves, you know, based on understanding and awareness. So, and it's really interesting, because I don't know if it, you know, Steven Pinker and some other people have talked about this, that you know, that there is a possibility that, you know, while we think about our world being very violent, and some people think that there's more violence than there ever has been, there's reasons why people think that. And the reasons are, is because it's more visible than it was in years past.
we didn't always have TVs that we could flick on and see that what was happening in a different part of the world or even down the street.
Exactly.
You know? So we're now in a point in time where we can see these things happening in real time. But that doesn't necessarily mean that there's more violence happening. For the most part, when you think about the number of stable countries that exist, those countries can only be stable if there's a relatively low, you know what I mean, amount of violence. And when I say, like, relatively low, I mean, like, if they're not being overthrown every other month, you know what I mean? If there's not an active Holocaust or genocide happening, they can maintain relative stability. That doesn't mean that, like, they don't have murders or other types of crime, but although in some parts of the world they've been able to reduce those statistics dramatically. But they also have other things that, you know, in place, you know, like maybe healthcare and socialized, you know, services or what have you, that make people's lives easier. But, you know, there's some people who've debated this a little bit. I tend to agree with Steven Pinker in thinking that violence overall has diminished.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that we still need to take into account things that are not happening within the West. And I think sometimes we have a very westernized mindset that doesn't always take into account what's going on in the developing world, you know, particularly in areas like the Congo, which has had a bloody civil war, you know, going on for decades, you know. And, you know, we're not necessarily looking at that. It's not on the news every day, and so it's something that we can forget. You know, is
right.
Going on very easily, but it is still going on. It's
right.
It's still happening. So, and there's you know, and then the violence in the Middle East related to the Arab Spring. You know, people are like, well, the Arab Spring is over. It's not over.
Wow.
It's still going on. I mean, Egyptians are still protesting, you know, the government. You know, they're not protesting Mubarak. Because he's out, you know what I mean?
Right.
But they're still protesting the government. They still don't want the government to become sort of an Islamist regime and an oppressive regime. There are women that are fighting this, you know. There are people who've been jailed. You know, there's all kinds of things that are going on in Egypt, you know.
Right.
And, you know, in Syria.
Right.
You know, it's still going on, you know, and all of these things are very quiet right now on your newscast. They're not really discussed because we're talking about the sequester and we're talking about all of these other things. And not that those things are unimportant. I'm not putting those things lower in importance, you know. In terms of our immediate needs as Americans, the sequester is a lot more immediate than what's going on in Syria and Egypt. But I'm just saying that because I think we have a tendency to have a very narrow focus and think about only what's going on in the world around us and not what's going on elsewhere, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
But I still think it's a lot less brutal, you know, when you think about it. And it's a lot less. And I think the difference also comes in the type of violence, too. We're a little removed from it now. We're more removed from it. And so that could be factoring into the perception that there's less of it. But it also could be impacting the way that it's done. You know what I mean? So now that we know that we can push a button and kill, you know, millions of people with an atomic bomb, maybe that makes us, you know, less likely to use it, you know what I mean? Or less like, or you know, maybe less inclined to escalate to that point, you know, as
Correct.
Quickly. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So, I mean, there's different ways to look at it. You know, we're not clubbing people in the head with axes anymore, or, you know, maces, you know. So
right.
It's a little different, you know. We have drones now. You know,
mm-hmm.
we have all different kinds of weapons. So the nature of the violence, you know, could also have something to do with, you know, how it's used and when it's used and whether or not the numbers are actually going down. But I think in general, most people are just less inclined to use violence as a first resort. You know?
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, we have to teach a better way.
Yeah.
We have to teach a better way because violence begets violence, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just horrible.
I don't know. It's hard to dissect all of that out. But like I said, I still lean more towards Steven Pinker's assertion that it's reduced. But in any case, but yeah, and where do we get our morals from? I think I already answered that. and I would also say that we don't get them from the Bible, because if you've ever read that thing, it is full of immorality and immorality that was, you know, either condoned or ordered by God. So I would invite you to read it again and then ask me the question. So.
Right. Right. Exactly. So,
I mean, talk about genocide.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, definitely genocide. But it's, you know, the whole thing, like I said, it's just interesting. Did you see that article about they were doing the genealogical background for that one African-American gentleman from South Carolina, and his Y chromosome, you know, helped them to make a major discovery?
Yeah, that was pretty neat, actually. It was very interesting, the article. Something like 340,000 years, something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
That's pretty awesome that they were able to make that discovery. And here he was thinking he was just gonna get a simple genealogy, you know, pointing to his, you know, trying to point him back to his you know, ancestral homeland.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, and
but,
come to find out that, you know, because of his unique Y chromosome, that, you know, he took it back a lot further than, you know, any of us had anticipated, especially the scientists, and it was a wonderful discovery. I mean, he's now deceased, but I'm sure, you know, the people in his family are absolutely thrilled at the fact that, you know, through their bloodline, you know, there were some new scientific discoveries. That's wonderful.
Yeah, that was really neat. That's pretty cool. I haven't had my DNA sequenced or had my genealogy done, you know, DNA genealogy done. I've thought about it, though. I would like to know, you know, what all is in here. It would be interesting to know. But, I mean, to a certain point, I mean, it's like, you know, I think some people put too much emphasis on it. You know what I mean? Like, it can give you your identity. You know, like, it can kind of tell you which people you're somewhat related to now. You know what I mean? But that doesn't tell you, like, what tribe or, you know what I mean? Or, you know,
right.
any of that sort of information, you know? But I think it's interesting. And I think that is really cool that in this case it taught the scientific community something that it gave the scientific community information that it didn't previously have, you know,
right.
something that they knew was likely to be true, but something that they didn't have evidence for. So that was kind of neat.
Excellent. So, you know, one of the things that they stated is that they believe that there are more Y chromosomes out there, and they just have to start testing more people, and maybe even more discoveries coming forth. So that's a wonderful, you know, that's the thing about science. You know, scientists actually cheer when they're wrong, when they're proven wrong. Being proven wrong is a good thing in science.
Yeah. Right. I'm sorry. I just got a little distracted by something. I'm sorry.
this is how our conversations go on outside of Blog Talk also.
I don't get distracted that often. I promise. But yes, it happens occasionally. But she does it to me, too. Don't let her lie to you.
That's so funny.
So, yeah. And, of course, you know, this week Hugo Chavez died, you know, from complications involving his cancer, lost his battle with cancer. So,
yeah.
You know, lots of people sad about that. Isn't the funeral tomorrow?
I think so, but I'm not sure.
Or tomorrow is not tomorrow for those of you listening. It's tomorrow for me, but it's Friday for you guys listening. It's yesterday for you guys.
Yeah, yesterday. right.
Yeah, yesterday.
In March 8th, which is Friday, which is tomorrow for us, but yesterday to you guys, National or International Women's Day. So congrats, this is Women's History Month.
Actually, I saw that there was some interesting work being done with by a religious group for International Women's Day. Well, it was an International Women's Day story. They do this year round, but they were working with women in India and elsewhere, trying to give them resources, regarding domestic violence and, you know, trying to help them find safe places and things like that. So good work that's being done by, you know, religious and non-religious organizations. But I just happen to say the religious organization just because it just went through my email.
Right.
But yeah.
Exactly.
It just came to mind because I just read it earlier today. So don't, no one get on me to say, like, oh, you know, she's just a religious apologist. No, I'm not an apologist. It's just that, you know, good work can be done by secularists and, you know, non-secularists. It doesn't have anything to do with you, you know, being a person of faith or a person of no faith. But, you know, we have to, you know, get to a point where we are doing some of this work, you know,
exactly,
as well. You know, especially if we want to be taken seriously, if we want to, you know, dispel the image of the sort of selfish, unreasonable, inhumane types of, non-humanist, rather, you know, skeptics and atheists that are out here, you know.
Exactly.
We can be critical of religion and still, you know, help and work with other, you know, religious organizations that are doing work. We don't have to necessarily bite our tongues,
right,
you know. So.
Exactly. You know, and, you know, we have to establish some type of rapport, some type of credibility, if you will, in the community. And,
right,
you know, programs like that. Because I believe this week is the National African Americans HIV Week, in which they address different churches around the country. They address the issues of HIV and AIDS, and they do education, and they do outreach. Now, they only do this 1 week out of the year, but that's better than the silence that had, you know, has permeated the church, you know, for decades. So, you know, give a little credit due. The only downside to that is they get money from a grant, and then they put these programs on. And I just feel that some of these churches receive more than enough money in tithes and offerings, that it doesn't have to be 1 week out of the year with grant money that's given to you, you know. But, you know, they're at least acknowledging it, so I have to give them credit for that.
Yeah. Got to give them credit for that. You know,
yeah.
Wish you would do it more often.
Right.
You know. deal seriously with the issue instead of, you know, telling people to just, you know, close their legs and the problem will take care of itself, you know?
Exactly. I just read somewhere, I have to look it up again, and I'll post it if I can find it, but they just passed a bill giving so many millions, I mean, it may even be billions, I have to find it, but, you know, a lot of money to abstinence-only programs, and it's been proven that these abstinence-only programs do not work.
Yeah, but it's politically popular because there's a lot of people who, you know, are religious and, you know, they don't want comprehensive sex ed taught because their kids might decide to use their genitals in ways their parents don't approve, you know? So.
Yeah.
You know?
Well.
But the fact of the matter is that we need comprehensive sex ed, and if, you know, if you don't want your kid to participate, then your kid doesn't have to participate, but you shouldn't deny it to other people, you know?
Exactly.
I mean, it's just like the HPV vaccine, like, right? Like, parents are like, oh, but if my girl gets this HPV vaccine, she's going to be a slut. You know what I mean? Like, that eliminates her risk of, like, everything else. If you just tell her about what the risks are and you give her the HPV vaccine, you will at least be helping her avoid the possibility of cervical cancer, you know, from most strains of HPV, you know?
Exactly. And then also, we can't forget the guys with the HPV. There are guys that have been developing throat cancer, and... They're, well, Raina can explain it. I'm not the scientist here.
Well, yeah, they have, I mean, you can get throat cancer from engaging in oral sex with someone who has HPV. I mean, but this is not to scare any of you. Not everybody who has HPV has a strain that will cause cancer. Not every person who's infected with HPV is always going to be infected with HPV. Some people have HPV and then, you know, they are able to fight it off. And then years later, they won't have any, you know, trace of HPV in their body. You know what I mean? And it's just one of those things. You just have to monitor. It's not the worst thing you can possibly have. I mean, even HIV is not the worst thing that you can possibly have anymore. You know, you can live with these diseases. You can have sex with these diseases. You can have relationships with these diseases, you know. And they don't have to... they don't have to limit your happiness, you know, or
exactly.
Your pleasure, you know?
Exactly, because, like, with HIV, that used to be a death sentence, as well as some other, you know, illnesses out there. But with the advances in medicine and science and technology, these are now not death sentences in most cases. Now they're just chronic illnesses. You know, you may want to look that up. But, you know, they have, you know, medicinal therapies that, you know, help keep these illnesses in check and at bay.
Right. And, I mean, and for some people, I mean, with drugs, you know, constantly being developed and, you know, some people have actually been able to, you know, reduce their viral load to, you know, to undetectable levels. You know what I mean? So it's possible to live a long, full life with this, but the goal should be to avoid transmission in the first place. So,
right.
And the only way to avoid transmission in the first place is to be informed and to have comprehensive sex education and to use protection and to talk to your partner. You know, you have
exactly.
to talk to them. You have to, you know, have are they aware of their status? You know, are you aware of yours? You know,
exactly.
And talk about it and be realistic about it. You know.
And personally, I recommend that when you all go out on one of your dates or soirees or what have you, you all can go to the clinic and get tested together. And then that way, you're being tested at the same time, and you go and get your results together. And have them read in front of one another, so then there are no secrets, and it's out there, and you've been tested. You know, I tell people they need to get tested at least once a year, You know, ladies, go for your yearly with your, you know, your gynecological, you know, exam. You know, they can do all of that then. They can take care of all, you know. But you have to request some of these tests. You have to specially request. And, you know, we've had an uptick in herpes. There's been an uptick in gonorrhea. There are some new strains of gonorrhea out there. You have to request for the HIV. You have to request, I believe, also for the chlamydia. So, you know, again, you know, it is in your best interest to make sure that, you know, you develop a relationship, because it's like this. If you're comfortable enough to sleep with someone and in regards to you being, you know, having a position, you should be comfortable enough with that position to request these things. You should be comfortable enough with that partner to request these things. Because, I mean, you know, if, you know, you're having sexual relations with that individual, and, you know, most people are a little bit more open to different techniques of sexual pleasure nowadays, if you're able to do those things with that person, you should be able to ask them, you know, their status, and be able to go to a clinic and get tested together and be honest with one another. And it's not hard to ask a man to use, you know, a condom, and it's not hard to ask a woman to use a dental dam or what have you. You know, you have these different, you know, scenarios out here, but that's what those prophylactics are for, protecting you.
Yep. Absolutely. But, yeah, I mean, it doesn't have to be a horrible thing. You know what I mean? And it doesn't have to be something that you dread. It can be something that you can discuss and have an open dialogue about, you know. And you know, I mean, I've known people who've dated and even married people with HIV. You know what I mean? And they're negative to this day, you know. And they're, you know, they have full lives. They, you know, they have sex. You know what I mean? They have... You know, they do everything that normal people do, you know?
Right.
It's just one of them happens to have a chronic condition.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. Mm. Exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah, so just be careful with your bodies and what have you. Oh, goodness. What time is it now? We've gone for about an hour.
Yeah.
We've covered so much ground. We talked about transsexual athletes.
Right.
We talked about the Y chromosome.
Mm-hmm.
The article that just came out this week. We talked about sex and, you know, sexually transmitted disease, and morality. Wow, we've gone quite a way. What other questions do we have, or anything else?
Well, let's see here. We talked about morality and how, you know, you can be a moral and ethical person without having, you know, a religious ideology.
Absolutely.
You know, that's the main thing. But oh, okay. Steve Harvey question here.
Uh-oh.
I don't find him funny.
That's the answer to your question.
Okay. Well, if we evolved from monkeys, why are there still monkeys?
Lord. If we were made from dirt, why is there still dirt?
That's right.
Okay. Or dust. Why is there still dust? Why do I have to dust my house? Who came from dust? No. Because we didn't come from monkeys is the answer to that question.
Exactly.
We share a common ancestor. Do you come from your aunt and your uncle? No.
Exactly.
You share a common ancestor with your aunt and your uncle. That would be your grandparents, you know?
Exactly.
Get out of here.
And we're primates. Look up primates. Look up hominids. to kind of give you
right.
a better understanding of what's happening.
I said aunt and uncle. I should have said, like, you know, do you come from the same parents as your third and fourth cousin, you know, your seventh
Everybody.
Cousin? No. You just share common ancestry, okay? Like, really. You know, it's ridiculous. And Darwin never said that we came from monkeys. We had an ape-like ancestor, and it was probably much more ape-like than human, but probably not as close to the apes that we know today.
Exactly.
So it would have been something different. And, you know, it's just like, you know, if you flip through your family albums, you know, you probably start off looking a lot like your parents. And then you might look a little bit like your cousins. You probably look a little bit like your, you know, a little more like your, you know, your aunt, your uncle, or you know, your biological aunt and uncle, you know. And then you might look something like your grandparents, but the further and further back you go, you look nothing like those people.
Exactly.
You know? Like, maybe you have your grandmother's nose, but you're not going to have, like, your great-great-great-great-grandmother's nose. Or her ears, or her eyes, you know what I mean?
Exactly. So. Exactly. Exactly. But, you know, those are some of the questions that we get, you know, on a consistent basis. And,
yeah.
you know, we wanted to answer those questions for everyone. If you have more questions, you can send them in. You can send it to me, blackfreethinkers@gmail.com. Again, blackfreethinkers@gmail.com. Look at the Blog Talk Radio profile. Has my email address out there. It is blackfreethinkers with an S at the end at gmail.com.
That's right. You can also reach me through my blog or through my email for my blog, which is rhodes2reality@gmail.com. And my WordPress blog is rhodes2reality, no periods, just one word. .wordpress.com. So, but yeah. But yeah, you know, it's, we've had a really good time on here. Just want to remind you guys again that, we're probably, like, in 2 weeks when I do my show again, we're going to be talking about, talking to my friend, Robert Patrick. He actually has an MS in political science, if I'm not mistaken, and we're going to be talking about Women's History Month a little bit and women that he admires. We'll probably talk a little bit about the passage of the Violence Against Women Act, women's rights, and, maybe we'll get into some Second Amendment issues. I have a feeling that he and I differ in that respect quite a lot. but maybe not as much as I think. We'll see. But I have a feeling. But yeah, thank you guys for listening, and had a good time. Hope you guys had a good time too. Don't forget, you know, if you have any questions, you know, send them in. I like answering questions. I like to, you know, try to have some things that you guys are interested in, you know, so I'm not just geeking out, you know, to myself every episode, you know? So, you know, let's try to make this show about you guys, you know?
Exactly.
So.
Exactly. We welcome it. You know, there's nothing too difficult. You know, we don't have the answers. We're also those types of people that, you know, we'll go look for the answers or refer you to someone who can answer it.
That's right. So, with that, everybody, I hope that you have a great weekend, and I will talk to you in about, well, I'll be probably talk to you before 2 weeks because I'll be on Kim's show, but but I'll be talking directly to you in 2 weeks. What is the show this weekend on, Kim, on Sunday show or tomorrow's show?
Yes, ma'am. We're going to be talking about the You Only Live Once culture and religious thinking and, you know, some of the pathological results of some of this type of thinking. I'll be citing a study that came out of Georgia State University, as well as a few other places. But, yeah, definitely.
Now, that is so interesting that you're going to be talking about yoga, Kim. And I guess we can talk about this right before we leave out today, right? But because in my experience, Christians do not subscribe to the YOLO. Now,
well,
in my experience, but
okay.
I do know about the prosperity gospel, though, if that's what you're referring to. It seems like there maybe is a little bit more of that YOLO.
Exactly. You only live once, and a little bit more selfishness. You know, I have mine, you get yours, and, you know, again, some of the pathology that comes from, you know, that comes from that. And
Yeah, because I remember, like, for example, when I went to go see Rent a few years ago, and my aunt and I had talked about it, and my aunt is a Southern Baptist. She actually goes to one of the most conservative churches in the Atlanta area. But I remember having a conversation with her, and I remember her being distinctly bothered by Rent and its implications, and not just because of the homosexuality and that's depicted in it, but she was very bothered by the La Boheme, or not the La Boheme, but the what is that song? You know, the big number that they do in the restaurant.
I don't really remember. I'm sorry.
It's the big number they do in the restaurants. It basically is like c'est la vie, you know. We do what we're gonna do today. We won't think about tomorrow. I can't remember what the name of the song is, and this is really embarrassing because it's like one of my favorite musicals. but basically, you know, it kind of had that, you know, sort of YOLO, you know, type of message. You know, live for today. You know, you only live once, and you know, kind of get it all out of your system, you know, because you don't know when you'll die, you know, that kind of thing. But yeah, like, I remember her telling me that she was very bothered by that. And I think I remember hearing a lot of Christians kind of echo that sentiment, you know, that, you know, what I got from it was that sort of thinking doesn't convict one, you know.
Right.
It doesn't convict one to keep one's thoughts on sinning, and keeping oneself from the possibility of sinning, you know. And the whole goal is to make oneself, put one in a good light, to get oneself into the right place in the afterlife. You know what I mean?
Exactly. But, you know, you and I both know that they'll profess that with words. And, you know, and again, this, you're talking about an older generation, which is a different mindset. So,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I know.
And that's the kind of church that I'm familiar with, because I did not go to a prosperity gospel church.
Yeah,
and if you would have introduced me to one, I'd have been like, them Negroes are crazy.
You know, I'm looking at it from that perspective because I've gone to a couple of different ones, and I'm sitting around, and I'm like, you're saying one thing, but you're doing something totally different. And then I'm looking at the younger generations, and, you know, again, you only live once is, you know, the creed of some of these young people, some, not all, but, you know, that has resulted in some deaths here in Chicago, a couple of local rappers, and it's just, you know, I just want to take a look at it, and, you know, and so that people can see that, yeah, you only have, you know, one life to live. However, that doesn't mean you should live it recklessly.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand the prosperity gospel plays into that quite a lot, but I mean, in a lot of ways, you could really put the blame mostly on American culture and its obsession with conspicuous consumption.
Exactly.
You know, and some of the representations that we have in the media and what have you. You know.
Exactly.
So.
You know, consumerism, the materialism, is horrible.
Yeah. Yeah, but that should be pretty interesting. It should be really, really, really interesting. So I'll be looking forward to that show. And I hope that you guys tune in too. So with that, we're going to play the theme music and get the heck out of here.
All right. Good night, everybody. Now get your bump hips ready.
Black free thinkers, where we walk by sight with a bright flashlight to illuminate night. Free thoughts, we don't walk by faith in the lost mind state, cause it's not quite safe. We don't recruit, we're not peers from a church, so don't be spooked, we're not here to convert. The only truth that's not pulled from a text, show me proof that's not good after death. This is the challenge to think for yourself, break it out of the bottle and speak what you felt. 310-982-4273 to get through, a venue for community, and this is the zone. If you'd like to speak with Kim, then pick up the phone. 310-982-4273 to get through. The next tree branch is Rainer, and it's best you listen to reason, science, and skepticism. It's loaded with straight facts, inspiring and dope. She can make Bill Nye retire his lab coat. Humans are hilarious, and every other Friday I'd like to hear commentary on culture, people. So I hit up Super Mario and bring in Emmeline to discuss why we're capable of ultra evil. It's normal for my brain to have a two-way street, but if there's collisions, well then you got to just mention it. And don't be afraid of where the truth may lead, ignoring your position of cognitive dissonance. When Father Teresa preaches, it's hard to stop. So Kim paired me up with Alfred in the barbershop. I have extended family and all these places now, as the free thought tree pollinates around. Yeah. This is the challenge to think for yourself, break it out of the bottle and speak what you felt. 310-982-4273 to get through, a venue for community, and this is the zone. If you'd like to speak with Kim, then pick up the phone. 310-982-4273 to get through. Black Creek, where we